what those people that have a very loud monger also have in common is they have this high functioning anxiety, which, you know, another word for that that's more common is super duper type A. Someone who is constantly busy, they're perfectionistic, they have like 1,000 different projects that they're juggling all at once, and they're always, there's a buzz inside their heads as they're always looking forward or looking back or just scanning the environment constantly. What's next on my to-do list? What should I do next? And that high that they get from doing all that is propels them forward.
That was Nancy Jane Smith, and you're listening to episode 160 of the Building Psychological Strength podcast, where we uncover the information, tools, and techniques to turn our minds into our most valuable asset.
The courage to face fears with persistence.
Being able to be present enough in this moment to choose my response thoughtfully.
We have the strength to bend to life stressors, to bend to adversity without snapping, without breaking.
There are only 6 things that contribute to our quality of life, and they are all experiences.
In every moment, we are deciding who we want to be and how we want to live our lives.
Noticing what your brain is doing and then being able to make choices.
Mobilize the things that we know lift us up.
Fear is not logical. It's primal.
Hey, everybody. Thank you so much for coming back for this episode of the podcast. This one's going to be a really interesting one because we are going to be talking about a potential blind spot that some of us have. And I love talking about topics like the one that we're going to be discussing today because they are the ones that are sneaky. They are the ones that are impacting our lives, that are keeping us from having the life experience that we want to have, and we don't even know that they're there. And as we dive into today, I want to just do a quick pat on the back to all of you who are listening to this episode, because it's not everyone who's willing to say, you know what, there are some aspects about myself that I think I could improve. You know what? I think I could do this thing called life a little bit better. And I'm willing to open myself up and be vulnerable and learn ways that I might be able to improve the experience that I'm having. And you're doing that. You're coming back here week after week, learning from these incredible experts from the fields of psychology and life design. And I just want to give you a huge pat on the back for that because, you know, we'll talk about it in this episode. Each of us is getting one life to be here. We're getting one shot at this beautiful life, and your life experience that you have is very much aligned to how psychologically strong you are and where your psychological well-being level is at. If you're not completely on your game there, the experience that you're having in life will suffer. And today's episode is going to point very specifically at one of those places. But before we jump in, I want to do a quick listener shout out. Someone left me a comment on iTunes, and I love their username. Their username is AW Loves Pinterest. Thank you. I also love Pinterest. Pinterest is awesome. But I love that username. And I'll read you their comment really quick. It says, I love this podcast on so many levels. The guests are so rich with knowledge. April is relatable, energetic, and a contagiously fun host. That made me so happy. And the tools I learned from the episodes have applied to many real life situations. Anyone can benefit from listening to this show. Thanks for sharing the goodness. I'm so excited about that because, you know, especially the piece where the tools that you're learning on this show are ones that you can apply. This is going to happen this week. At the end of this episode are some actionable steps that you can take to make a meaningful improvement in your life. And we'll get into the domain that we're going to be talking about in just a moment. But that's something that I strive to do on every single episode of this podcast. This podcast is not one that I want you to passively listen to and then go on about your busy life and not actually implement anything. Instead, I want you to understand the, you know, real information behind whatever topic we're talking about. Today, I'll let the cat out of the bag. We're talking about something called high functioning anxiety. So interesting. Stay with me because it's a sneaky, sneaky topic that I want you guys to understand. But I'll always do my best to uncover the information behind the topic so that you have a good understanding of what it is and the implications for it. But that's not good enough. I also want to give you ways that you can apply quick and easy techniques in your life that can make a meaningful improvement. Because ultimately, my biggest goal is that I want us all to have the best life experience we can possibly have. And improving our psychological strength is one way to do that. All right, so this week we are going to hear from an incredible woman named Nancy Jane Smith. She is a licensed professional counselor. She has 11 years in private practice and has spent more than 20 years working as a counselor and a coach. She's also written 3 different books on living happier, which I adore. And the most notable book that you might have heard of is called The Happier Approach: Be Kind to Yourself, Feel Happier, and Still Accomplish Your Goals. Now, that last piece, Still Accomplish Your Goals, is really a big hint into what we're going to be talking about this week. I mentioned it a bit ago. This week, we're talking about high functioning anxiety. And to just cut to the chase, we're talking about the situation where you are getting a ton done. You are type A. You're on top of your game. You're achieving. You are goal-oriented. You can make anything happen. And one of the driving forces behind that motivation and all of that energy is actually anxiety. And I love the way that Nancy goes through talking about what high-functioning anxiety is, because it's not what you think it is. And it actually applies to way more people than you would ever believe. And the implications for it and how it shows up in your life and the problems that it can cause and the issues that it has for yourself, your self-image, the value you place on yourself intrinsically, all of that is wrapped up in this one topic. We're going to go through so much today. I'm going to get really vulnerable about my own situation. This is absolutely something, I'll be honest, I was excited to talk to Nancy because this is a topic that I know resonates with me. I know it resonates with me on a professional level. I know it resonates with me on the level of being a mom and trying to juggle a lot of things in life. And I think it's going to resonate with a lot of you too. So hang in there with this one and really be vulnerable and open to asking yourself some of the difficult questions. I open this episode by saying, hey, I'm glad you're here. You're the type of person who is willing to be open and acknowledge the fact that you might be able to do something better. This is going to be one of those times. You might realize that some of the ways that Nancy describes how high-functioning anxiety shows up, they actually sound a lot like you. And if they do, Nancy goes into some actionable steps in the second half of this episode, things around integrity for yourself, things around self-compassion and focusing on your intrinsic value, and just little behavioral things you can do on a day-to-day basis to help alleviate some of the anxiety that comes from normal ways that people tell type A people to behave. Just say no, set boundaries, you know, set some rules in place. Sometimes that can make things worse. So I'm really excited to be speaking with Nancy today because she just has this very specific expertise in an area that I don't see a lot of people talking about. And because of that, and because of how well you might be doing if this applies to you, this can really be a blind spot for people. And it can be one of those places where you're not doing as well as you could be. You could be feeling a lot more calm. You could be feeling a lot more focused, more at ease, but you're not because it feels normal. It feels like everyone is going through this and it's going well. I'm achieving. So why is this a problem? So Nancy just does a beautiful job in this episode of talking about what this is and how we can start to alleviate that anxiety underneath, but still achieve our goals. That's why I love the title of her book. So I'm really excited for you all to hear this information from Nancy Jane Smith. Let's roll that interview. All right, everybody. I am so excited to welcome Nancy Jane Smith to the podcast. Nancy, thanks so much for being here.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited for this conversation.
Oh, me too. The info that we're likely going to dive into today is a topic that I think might surprise people, maybe in a good way and maybe in a little bit of a scary way for some people, because I think it's one of those things where, you know, we all have potential blind spots that we might not be aware of. And in today's conversation, it's going to come up just for folks listening to this. It could come up as a blind spot of a place that you have an ability to make an improvement in your life that you might not have realized is even there. So those situations are so powerful, but I'm already getting ahead of myself. So we'll just stop and slow down and regroup and start where we should start. Nancy, tell us a little bit about yourself and the work that you do.
Well, I am a licensed professional counselor and coach, and I've been in practice since 2007. And I specialize in working with mainly women. I work with men as well, but women just tend to come to me more easily, specialize in helping them deal with high functioning anxiety.
Okay. So boom, right there, right? That is a word that people may or may not have heard. So that word right there, high functioning anxiety, is the thing that I saw about you. And I'm like, oh my gosh, we need to talk to her, because I mean, selfishly, it's something that applies to me, but because of that, I know that there are a lot of other people that I've interacted with, both in the Peak Mind community and just in my general life, who absolutely could benefit from this information. So I hope folks who are listening to this can already see why I'm excited to have this conversation. Can we dig in? Can you give us just a little bit of info on what you mean when you say high functioning anxiety?
Yeah. So how I got started in high functioning anxiety is, a few years ago, I wrote a book called The Happier Approach that talks about the inner critic. And I call the inner critic your monger. And it's kind of processing how to get rid of your, how to not get rid of your monger, but how to quiet that voice. And so as I was talking to people about the book, I realized, you know, everyone has a monger, but there are certain people that have a very, 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 very loud monger, who's constantly telling them they're doing it wrong, they need to be doing it differently, and just kind of really running their lives. And I'm one of these people, in a true confession. And what I realized is, what those people that have a very loud monger also have in common is they have this high functioning anxiety, which, you know, another word for that that's more common is super duper type A. Someone who is constantly busy, they're perfectionistic, they have like 1,000 different projects that they're juggling all at once, and they're always, there's a buzz inside their heads as they're always looking forward or looking back or just scanning the environment constantly. What's next on my to-do list? What should I do next? And that high that they get from doing all that is propels them forward. So I always say people with high functioning anxiety have anxiety, but how they deal with it is by functioning at a very high rate. With perfectionism, people pleasing, procrastination, all of that stuff comes out because they're trying to quell down this inner anxiety, and they don't want anyone to know that's how they're feeling.
It's sneaky, right? Because there, you know, we were chatting a little before we hopped on to record. There are blind spots that we can all have. And when you look at the marketing space, for example, I'm going to talk about something that's a little bit out of the context of what we're talking about in this conversation. But from a marketing standpoint, products and services exist in the world because they solve a problem for us. They help us do something, right? But the only time that a consumer will buy a product or a service is when they realize that they have a problem. It's called being problem aware. If you have a consumer who absolutely needs a product or a service, but they don't even realize that they have the problem, they're not going to buy the thing that would fix the problem that they don't realize they have. It's like, you don't realize what you don't know. You don't know what you don't know. And that's one of the most, from a mental health standpoint, one of the stickiest times, because we can get so focused on, well, look at all of my output. Look at how well I'm doing. Look at all of these external rewards and accolades and achievements that I have. How are you telling me that there's something that's wrong, or something that I could be improving? And it can be really easy to miss the underlying anxiety, in this case, or underlying issue that's being masked by all of that, the situation that's keeping us in the position of being unaware of the problem that we have. And so I was really excited to bring you on because this is one of those times where people could have a blind spot.
Yeah, definitely. And that is what, what happens is I will, we'll talk about this and I'll be on podcasts and I'll immediately get people saying, even in my own podcast, they'll email me to be like, oh my God, this is me. And I never thought it was a problem. But now I can really see like it is, because for a lot of people, it hurts their relationships because they're so tired by the end of the day. They just come home and numb out with TV or alcohol, and they're not connected with themselves or the other people in their lives that they really want to be connecting with. Instead, they are so goal driven. And so what's next on my to-do list? What do we need to be doing next? And it's this hopped up energy that is hard to connect with.
That's huge. I'm wondering if we can almost do some defining and take a step back and talk about anxiety in and of itself, because there's some markers of some of the things that you've said that really tie the link between, you know, the topic that we're talking about, high functioning anxiety, and just what anxiety is. You mentioned this notion of not ever being in the present, right? In the past, yeah. In the future, the constant mental chatter. Can you go through some of those at a more basic level? And then let's talk about how they might relate to a person's experience who is in this high functioning version of what we're talking about.
Yeah. So a couple years ago, I read the book, First We Make the Beast Beautiful by Sarah Wilson. And it is about her journey through anxiety. And when I read the book, I was like, oh my God, like she is a very, I would say, extreme case of anxiety. But when I read the book, it really humanized for me how anxiety shows up. And the stereotypical way we think of anxiety is, you know, you have a panic attack or you're agoraphobic and you won't leave your house or you have major social anxiety. But anxiety is sneakier than that, especially high functioning anxiety. But anxiety is the idea of just this energy that's there all the time. And it can result in headaches and stomach aches. It can come through in an inability to make decisions, like racing thoughts. It's that 4 a.m. wake up where you can't go back to sleep because you're just so overwhelmed. I'm trying to think of some other way. I, for one, have a lot of digestive issues, and that's how my anxiety shows up. And I will recognize that I'm feeling anxious because I'll have digestive issues. I'll recognize I'm anxious because I have digestive issues more than I will recognize that I'm actually feeling anxious.
And it is. It's so sneaky and so pervasive.
Yeah.
In that way. Yeah.
It's also so normalized. I mean, we kind of wear it as a badge of honor. And if there's one thing in the world that I'm on a mission to change, it is that we don't have to be this driven. We can still accomplish our goals without this massive underlying energy of anxiety.
And you see that, right? You can see that in, you know, I look at a lot of entrepreneurial things, and you can kind of see that in this like hustle and grind culture, this notion of everything needs to be fast paced, do 100 things at the same time. And we know that that's the opposite of what it looks like to have a calm, focused, strong, resilient mind where you can focus on one task. You can really quell that mental chatter. You can, I mean, essentially, you can focus on one thing at a time. And I've been on both sides of that camp. And I want to talk to the people listening to this right now, if any of this is resonating, even just as we've talked about this definition of what it is. I've been on both sides of the coin. I've been in the situation where my mind was the loudest place possible to be, where my to-do list, my shopping list, my task list for my job, the projects that I have going on, the goals that I have, the stuff I have to remember, conversations, phone calls, all the stuff was on constant overload. This is just one example of the ways that it showed up. There were others. It was the noisiest, loudest place to be. And I have been on the other side of the coin where I've come to more recently, where my mind is actually a very quiet, typically, not always, a very quiet, focused place to be. and I'm still achieving. It's possible to do it without having your mind be that way. So I just want to tell people, this episode is really coming from my heart, because I know there are people out there who want to have that high achievement, want to do big things in the world, achieve big goals. But I want to be someone who can come here and tell you exactly what you just said, Nancy. It is possible to do this without having the screaming chatter or whatever the symptom that you tend to have. It's possible to do it without that.
Yeah. And a lot of that screaming chatter, you know, for me, the biggest, when I start working with clients, there's always a piece of trust that they have to trust me that, that is possible, because it's kind of addictive to be that hopped up, to be that excited about your day, to be rushing through the to-do list. You know, I used to come downstairs when I was working at home, and I would have all this stuff, and I'd be all hopped up and thinking about all these different things. And my husband would say to me, "I think you need to take a deep breath." And I would just want to punch him in the face. Are you kidding? I don't want to take a deep breath right now. I want to stay on this buzz. And then I realized that in the buzz, I wasn't accomplishing anything. I was just flickering from one thing to the next because I was so hopped up, I couldn't settle myself down to do anything.
That feels so familiar to what I actually, one of the biggest turning points for me that signaled, I don't think this is normal. I don't think you're supposed to feel this way, is that in the evenings, I was that person who was just, energy is not my problem. Calming down is my problem. So during the day, as the day goes on, I ramp up this bank of energy just from working and from, you know, doing all these tasks that if I don't do something to burn it off and I go home, I bring that exactly. I sound textbook to what you described. I bring that insane amount of energy with me, and I'm not able to be in that environment that's a lot more calm and focused. I used to call it, I'm coming out of work and I'm hitting a brick wall. I'm going 60 miles an hour and I've just hit the brick wall. And I've had to learn to make that transition better. And I think we should get into this a little bit in a moment. But the thing that was really evident for me is I noticed in the evenings, the higher energy I was, the louder and noisier that voice was, the more things it was trying to keep track of at one time, I would be in my kitchen or wherever in the living room thinking that life was normal. And all of a sudden I would feel myself go, because I realized I had not been breathing. I wasn't.
Right.
I wasn't breathing. And at some point, biology will take over and force you to breathe. And that's what was happening. Isn't that just like amazing to think
that's
about?
That's amazing. Yeah.
It's just insane. So you've given a great description of, you know, what this looks like in people's lives. Can we talk a little bit? You kind of touched on some of the implications for it, because I want people to understand, again, yes, this is a thing. Yes, you can achieve if at that same level without this level of anxiety that's driving you. And if you don't confront this issue, what are some of the ways that you found with people that it started to manifest in not a great way? Because I have all kinds of things from my personal life and home life that I've noticed, but I'm sure that you've had them with your clients coming in to talk to you about ways that this just is not working for them in their life.
Well, one of the big ways that it shows up there, I have a lot of examples, but one of the big ways and one of the reasons people really have an aha and become problem aware is they see it in their kids. And so they can notice that their kids are starting to be anxious and they're like, oh my gosh, if I'm really honest with myself, I am too. And that's the first time they have the mirror of what's really going on. So, and they want to seek help because they want to help their kids. So that's, you know, to pay attention to that in your own lives if you have children. But one of the big ways it really shows up is in control. One of the ways we deal with the feelings of anxiety is if I can convince myself that I control my life and I aim for perfection, then I can kind of quell these anxious thoughts. That's what we tell ourselves. And so a lot of my clients have issues with food, issues with eating healthy, quote unquote, because that's a way they can control what's happening in their lives. A lot of my clients have issues with drinking and you know, and that alcohol drinking has, you know, has become either, oh, I'm a major alcoholic, but there's a whole continuum there of having problems drinking. And so a lot of my clients rely on that, you know, glass or two a night of wine to settle them down, and it starts eking up, and that's another place they get concerned. And the never being able to settle themselves, like the constant amp up and the losing of sleep because they're amped up at 4 a.m. and they just can't let it go.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yes to all of that. I mean, you can see where the element of just, we mentioned it a few moments ago, pure anxiety, where that link is, right? It's still, there's still that element of needing something, whether it's alcohol or whatever it is for you, to self-soothe, to calm yourself down, like an external substance of some sort to calm down. That's a huge marker. And what's interesting about that too, so much around this, right? The notion of high functioning anxiety, this idea of drinking daily, all of it is so normal, and yes. Or we'll say common. It's so common that we believe that it's normal, or that's how things should be. The funny example that I give, it's not 100% relevant here, but I always pick on HGTV on Sunday nights, because you find people, and maybe it is people who have high functioning anxiety as well. I'd love to hear your thoughts. But on Sunday nights, right, you're looking ahead to the week ahead, and a lot of people have that sense of dread, right? Mm-hmm. They're just, oh, I know Monday's going to hit and I'm going to have 5 days of this. And for me, it used to be, I'm going to go into a meeting at 8 a.m. on Monday morning and my last meeting will end at 4 p.m. on Friday. This is crazy. Like, it's going to be 5 days nonstop. I'm barely going to eat. This is nuts. And at some point they're going to realize that I'm not who they think I am. And you start to catastrophize, right? And then people turn on HGTV and they watch Island Hunters because they want to dissociate and feel like, nope, I'm not in my place. I am hunting for a home in Bali. And there's nothing wrong with watching HGTV, and I make this funny joke about it. But the notion that you need that escape, it's okay to feel like, you know, in a healthy way that where you're not harming yourself, that you can go get it. But man, the fact that, like, noticing that you need that on a daily or weekly basis, that's a signal, right?
Yes, absolutely. Yes. Yeah.
Are there other signals that you've come up with? So, you know, we've kind of talked about this external, seeking for external things to calm you down, substances, maybe just repetitive patterns that you're using to dissociate. You mentioned maybe feelings of just high arousal, because it can be excitement. Am I missing any, or does that kind of cover it?
That kind of covers it. Yeah. Another trait of just a kind of a personality trait, I guess, that I see in a lot of my clients that have high functioning anxiety is that, and this is something that was true for me, loyalty is a very high value for them. So I always give all my clients a values exercise, and almost all of them put loyalty as number one or in the top five. And they are very loyal to the people around them, like would go to the ends of the earth for them. You ask them to do something, they have a very high integrity value. But they are not loyal to themselves. So everyone else goes ahead of them. And to the point where a lot of my clients are just like kind of like walking heads. They have no connection to their body. They have no connection to how they're feeling or what's happening around them. They're just so wrapped up in what's next. How do I perform my best? What did I do wrong there? How can I do it differently? That whole mental chatter is just running their lives.
Oh man, so much comes to mind around that. With, you know, your personal, it's going to sound like it's not completely related, but I swear people listening, this is, your personal integrity is such a big deal, and you learn about your own integrity to yourself by whether you are holding up your own boundaries, keeping your own promises to yourself, taking care of yourself, etc. And what can follow from not having that level of personal integrity with yourself, not integrity with other people, because as you've mentioned, you'll be loyal to other people to your own detriment. what can mm-hmm. follow from that is if you are learning about yourself that you're not the type of person who will keep promises to yourself, a lot of problems can follow from that as well. So that just hit me in the heart around we will say yes to other people in circumstances and bend over backwards to do things for them that we would never do for ourselves, just to keep ourselves at a basic okay place.
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Okay. So we've kind of talked about what this is. We've talked about what this looks like. We've talked about what's at stake. And I mean, the thing that I haven't outright mentioned that I feel like I should, it's the soapbox that I get on from time to time on this podcast, is that one of my biggest goals with bringing experts onto this podcast and talking about these important topics like Nancy's background and the information that she knows is that ultimately our life experience, the way that we experience things day to day, the way that our memories form, our level of joy and happiness and contentment, all of that largely stems from the degree to which we're mentally strong and mentally healthy and our level of well-being is doing okay. And I've talked about it a lot before, but my passion behind this work comes from the fact that I have been intimately reminded that we, over the course of my life, through a number of situations, losing my dad, being diagnosed with an incurable, you know, chronic condition, I have multiple sclerosis, over and over, I've been introduced to this notion that we have one life. We are here one time. And if our mental well-being can help us make the most of that one shot that we have and have the best, most vibrant life experience, why shouldn't we go after that? Why not go after that situation where you can achieve at that level that you want to achieve while having a quiet, focused mind? Why not go after it? So where I'd love to go with, you know, the rest of our conversation is just, how do we help people get there? How do we get people, like, what are some things that you've talked to your clients about, some things that people can do to start to move in that direction? I know it's not a light switch. It's not an overnight thing. But to start to steer the Titanic into the right direction where they're moving in the direction of that focused, calm mind.
Yeah. I wanted to throw in that it, you know, I think those, as you said, the when my dad died, that was a big pivotal moment for me to recognize that he had this high functioning anxiety. And actually the book, The Happier Approach, I wrote, a friend of mine calls it a love letter to my dad because his monger and inner critic was so loud. And I saw that in him, that even when he died, he still felt like a failure. And I was like, I can't, this is not how I want to live my life. Like, it was a real wake up call for me. So to answer the question, how can we fix this or do something about this? The biggest thing, you know, my clients probably get sick of it. The two things I talk about all the time, building the self-loyalty with yourself that I talked about, that's something that integrity piece. But also I talk a lot about feelings. And I have to say, I hate that I wouldn't, if you would have told me 10 years ago that I would be talking about feelings and that would be the main thing I'd be talking about, I would have been like, there's no way. I hate feelings. You know, they are terrible. And so I always want to say that because especially for people that have anxiety, the last thing they want to do is tap into what they're feeling. But that is where the magic is. Because I talked about that, we're just walking heads. And so tapping into our feelings allows us to start building that self-loyalty. Because if I can acknowledge that I am angry or I am frustrated or I am sad, if we have anxiety, what we do is we're just like, I'm so anxious. I'm just overwhelmed. I'm just so anxious and I'm so overwhelmed. And we just repeat that on repeat. And we never drop down to say, what's really going on here? Let's have some pause and some curiosity about that. And then I can say, I'm sad. And I give my clients a feelings sheet that lists out all the feelings. I still have to pull out that feeling sheet when I'm doing the work because it's hard to name what you're feeling. But the idea isn't to then be like, oh my gosh, you know, the anniversary of my dad's death is coming up. And it always amazes me how hard the weeks leading up to that are. And So that feeling of sadness and missing him has been coming up more. And years ago, if that would have come up, I would have been like, this isn't appropriate. We're going to work. We can't be feeling sad right now. And I would have pushed that feeling down and pushed it down and pushed it down all day long. And my stomach would have started aching and I would have, you know, been getting nauseous. And I would have come home and just yelled at my husband for no reason because I had all this anxiety left over from the idea that I just didn't give myself the grace of saying, yeah, you're sad. This is sad. That's okay. We can handle sad. And that's all I'm asking people to do. I'm not asking them to cry or go into a corner or be, you know, I got to take the rest of the day off. I'm feeling sad about my dad. I'm just asking you to give yourself the grace to say, this is what I'm experiencing right now. And if I'm experiencing it, then that's okay. Because it's what I'm experiencing.
I love that. It's such a compassionate thing to do. And it's funny because I have this, it's like a journal planner thing that I use on a day-to-day basis. I'm completely addicted to it. It's called the Self Journal. I'll link up to it in the show notes just because I just love it. It's awesome. But you have to write your goal for the day every single day. And I use it a little bit differently. Like, goal orientation is not my problem. Again, like energy is not my problem. I don't need like more oomph behind me pushing me to be a high achiever. That isn't it. But so much of the time, especially if it's a really busy day, the goal that I write down is you're allowed to be a human being and do one human being's worth of stuff today. Just do like one person's worth of stuff today. You don't have to do 10 people's things. You don't have to try to do 8 things at a time. What if you just did one human being's worth of stuff? And it always makes me pause. I'm like, man, because it isn't something that comes naturally to me at all.
Right.
Not at all.
Yeah.
And that's something else that I want to mention to folks around. And I'm sure you've seen it, Nancy, like around the habitual nature of this. This is a beautiful example of, at least for me, I found that our minds are very much creatures of habit. We navigate to situations that feel familiar. I'm not going to use the word comfortable because they don't feel good sometimes, but we navigate to places that feel familiar that we've been to before. And if I've noticed that one of those places I go to is to be this like hyper doer, this person who is going to juggle 85 different things, even if they aren't my balls to juggle, I'll pick them up and I'll take them anyway because I'm accustomed to feeling like that person who's overwhelmed and in the middle of all of it. Mm-hmm. And it's not comfortable. It's not good or helpful either. And I just want to put those words out there and say it as clearly as I can, because again, there might be somebody listening to this who notices, man, I'm that person at work who somehow I always end up doing everybody else's job in addition to my own. Uh-huh. Yeah. It's not your ball to pick up. Why'd you pick it up? And oh, but it wouldn't have gotten done. Okay.
Exactly.
Okay. But, you know, you get so accustomed to being that person who's in the mix and sort of buzzing in the middle of all of it. And I can say that with love because I was that person.
And I think that for me, that was where the self-help and the mental health industry kept me stuck in anxiety, because they kept saying to me, set better boundaries and stop being such a perfectionist and change, you know, say no. And every time I did that, my anxiety would go through the roof. And because I didn't know how to do that and be kind to myself at the same time, I didn't know how to say, oh, when you watch it, I had a client who, to you, like, how will it get done? To that example, she always ordered the copy paper for her office. It wasn't her job, but she just always would notice when the copy paper was down and she would order it. And so I was like, and she hated it. She was so mad about it. And I was like, well, let it go down. Let the office run out of copy paper. And someone else will see that and will order more. And she, you know, but, and she was so dis- uncomfortable with that. And that's the piece that we miss, is being kind to ourselves as we sit in that discomfort and recognizing this is hard, this is unnatural, this isn't something I normally do. How far can I let this go? Can I let it go all the way until we're out of paper? Or can I, you know, let it go down where we're just going to run out, and then maybe I'll ask someone else to order the paper for me? So we don't have to go cold turkey. It isn't all or nothing. We just need to be making little manageable changes where we're challenging that discomfort piece for ourselves.
I love that. And the other piece that's coming up for me that it's resonating as well is taking, or how you would define your value as a person. Do you find that people in that situation, I'm valuable as a person because I'm able to do this for other people, achieve that result, get that thing done, whatever. I'm valuable because of what I can produce, not intrinsically because of who I am. Because
exactly.
If you can turn it inward and say, let's just for funsies, let's just run a thought experiment. What if you are perfectly, beautifully valuable just because you exist as the person, the unique person that you are? And I don't mean that in like a fluffy, let's all hug it out, the world is rainbows and puppies, but legit. What if your value does not come from what you can produce? What if it comes from the fact that you're just here? Then it lets you off the hook a little bit about your value does not really come from the fact that you order copy paper.
Right.
That isn't it. Because what happens then if you don't do it? Your whole, ability to value yourself is gone because you didn't do this one task, or you weren't able to. Maybe you felt sick or you're tired one day. That's crazy.
It's a house of cards. I mean, that you're building, that it's all built on this, when really it's all built on that, on the cards you put up, but really it's your valuable, period. And something I have started doing about a couple months ago, I realized, that has made a big difference in that area, because that's something I still struggle with sometimes, is when I would go to the bathroom, I would recognize that I would go to the bathroom and I'd wash my hands, but I never really looked at myself in the mirror. I would make sure that my hair was okay or whatever, but I didn't pause to really look at myself. And so I have made it a practice, and I'm a big fan of these little things you can do mindfulness hacks that you can do throughout the day that kind of jar you into being like, oh yeah, look, I have a whole body here. And one of those was, I started making eye contact with myself in the mirror and just saying, how you doing today? How you doing? Just internally, I'm not saying it out loud, but it reminds me of, oh, look at you. You're a person. You're a human being who has thoughts and feelings. You're not just here to serve the rest of the world. You're here to take care of yourself too. And it's been, every time I do it, I get tears in my eyes, because it's really connecting with myself. And I think I'm tearing up because I'm recognizing how much I have turned away from myself and haven't given myself that kindness and grace.
There's one group of people who immediately comes to mind, and this is not the only group of people who this pertains to. I think every single person in the world could benefit from doing that exercise that you just said. But it's particularly top of mind because I'm exiting that period when you have very young children, particularly when they're in that first year of life, even when their needs are really high. And even in those first few weeks, if there's anybody listening to this who has a very young, young, young child, I am high-fiving you through this podcast because I see you and I know what that's like. It's funny, but we have to say, no, you're a whole person. You're allowed to go to the bathroom. You get to have a break. You get to eat. You get to shower. And it's not... to me, it felt like in that period, this was well prior to me working on what I can now say after talking to you was definitely high functioning anxiety. before working on that, it would feel like I was shirking my responsibility by asking somebody else to hold the baby so that I could eat.
A
basic thing, like go to the bathroom, take a shower. The baby cries. Like, take a shower. And I can say that now with a clear mind. But at the time, it didn't feel that way. And so just know, if you're listening to this and you're in that situation or one that feels like it, it may not feel that way, but you are a whole human being with your own biological and psychological needs, and it's okay to take care of them. You're not doing anything wrong and not shirking any responsibilities, because I definitely have felt that hardcore.
Yes. Yeah.
So we've kind of talked about some tangible things, but I want to make sure that we recap them with a nice little bow for people. So you talked about, keep me honest with this list. You talked about personal integrity, keeping promises to yourself, and all that goes with that. We talked about self-compassion, for the fact that you are human. And we talked about it again, that you have needs. Other actionable things, you've mentioned a number of them, and I wish I would have been writing every single one of them down, but I got all engaged in our conversation and forgot to, frankly.
So I always say, you know, the acknowledging the feelings, and you know, kind, and even if the feelings word is too much for you, which I totally understand, just acknowledging what's going on with you, acknowledging what's coming up, acknowledging that you're angry in the car. And one of the, I'm going to go back to think positive and be grateful in a second, because I want to go to the another thing that's tangible is, getting in your body. And to me, that's another thing that I never want to do. But if I force myself, it has to be a full body movement. So if I notice that I can't stay on one task and I'm jumping from thing to thing, I will stand up and I will touch my toes or reach for the sky or wiggle or do a dance party, something that reminds me that I am human. I have a body. Again, everything I do is trying to get out of that I'm a walking head idea. But something that people with high functioning anxiety do a lot is they love the idea of thinking positive and being grateful. And they take those two phrases to the extreme so that they don't have to feel anything. So if I'm feeling sad about my dad, well, I should be grateful. I had him for 78 years. I should think positive. My mom's still here. And we shame out the what's really happening with us. And so to really watch for that with yourself, how much do you know, all the time I'm saying to clients, you know, they will say something, they'll be like, but it's not a big deal because blah, 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 blah. And then they totally take it away with thinking positive and being grateful. And I want to just you to put a period in it. I'm feeling angry, period. I'm frustrated with someone at work, period. You don't have to explain it or justify it or make it pretty.
That's so good. That is so good, especially in this age of, we talk about a lot on this podcast, some elements of positive psychology. There's other, you know, areas of the field that we definitely talk about here too. But one of the biggest misconceptions there, and one way that a lot of people get it wrong, and I'm going to point right at me and my group of people with high functioning anxiety, is that you can look at it as, if you're not just putting a rose colored glasses spin on everything, you're doing it wrong. And in fact, by doing that, you're doing it wrong. Like, it's not what it means at all. It means cultivating all the things that make us mentally well and mentally healthy, positive emotions being only one small and not even the most impactful part of it. So that was really great, because it's almost as though we turn everything into a competition. How much can we do this to the fullest extent? Yes. And really turn this into some type of competition. I'm curious, within the field or within the work that you do, as we're wrapping up, I always love to ask my guests who have these varied backgrounds and these deep areas of expertise, what does it mean to you? What does it look like to you for somebody to be psychologically strong? What does that look like?
I think for someone to be psychologically strong means they have a strong integrity with themselves. And so they can, whatever pops up for them, they can trust that it'll be okay. Even if it's something scary or sad, or they have the psychological strength to know where they need to ask for help, where they need to take a break, where they need to stop, where they need to keep pushing. And they can do all of that with a sense of kindness.
That was so good. I love that. That's not something that I've heard, I don't think, anybody mention when I've asked them that question. So it's a really great nuance to bring in, is that aspect of being kind and compassionate and having some integrity toward yourself. I love that. if people are interested in your book or your podcast or you and the work that you do, where can people learn more?
They can find me at live-happier.com. And both my podcast and my book are called The Happier Approach. So you can find The Happier Approach anywhere you listen to podcasts. And then you can order my book on Amazon or barnesandnoble.com.
That's awesome. Thank you so much for sharing that. Thank you so much for being here. I was so excited for this conversation and it did not disappoint. This is one of those areas, as I mentioned at the opening of the show, that can be such a blind spot for people because in so many ways, our minds are incredibly sneaky at keeping us in the position that we're in. They're incredibly good at convincing us that the thoughts and feelings we're having are completely fine and valid, and even when that's not the case. And so it can be really difficult to spot when things like this are areas that we can improve on. And I love how clearly you've laid out what it looks like to have high-functioning anxiety so that people who resonate with that can really think about how that might be manifesting in their lives and how they can make some improvements. So thank you so much for being here, Nancy. This has been awesome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
It's a simple fact that nearly everyone in the world could benefit from building psychological strength, but not everyone will put in the time and effort to do so. But today you did. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Building Psychological Strength. Now, if you're interested in building the mental toughness, confidence, and resilience you need to thrive through life's ups and downs, visit us at www.peakmindpsychology.com. Also, if there's someone in your life who could benefit from this episode, please share it with them. And if you yourself found this episode valuable, meaning if you took away even one insight that you can use to build psychological strength in your own life, we would so appreciate it if you would drop us a rating and a review on iTunes. The thing is, the more ratings and reviews we have, the easier it is to get this powerful and important content out to the people who need to hear it. Remember, your mind can be your most valuable asset or your biggest liability, and you get to choose. So choose wisely, my friend, and I'll see you next time on Building Psychological Strength.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.